This morning we'll be reading from texts 21, 22, and 23 from chapter 5. And although this is a little on the technical side, there's things that are more technical, but I'll try to make it very relevant, because the discussion is about creation, but it's also about how living entities become entangled in the creation, and using the logic of Jiva Goswami, if we can understand how we got involved in this mess, it gives us a clue how to get out. And that's actually the purpose behind asking all this kind of questioning. It's so that one understands, why does Narada want to know? What does Maharaj Parikshit want to know? Or why should we want to know? A bunch of technical stuff. On the verge of death, what does it matter? It matters because this entanglement becomes accessible by understanding how all of this works. Plus, just being inspired by how wonderful is Krishna, the inspiration to want to serve Him. I'm going to start with a phrase that we read yesterday afternoon. If you can recall, proportionate to one's surrender to Krishna from text 17. Proportionate to one's surrender, Krishna gives himself. And when he gives himself, Krishna gives not only, he gives the means by which you can know him, yena mamupiyanti te. But Krishna also gives, because he likes to, Krishna gives abilities to his devotees to do things that ordinarily that devotee couldn't do. And Krishna likes that. Krishna does that because he likes to do that. He likes to decorate his devotees. And the devotees like to be instruments for what Krishna likes to do. And the relish for the devotee is not that he got to do something. The relish for the devotee is the relationship with Krishna. The intimacy of the relationship with Krishna. So, while we're over here marveling at how Brahma does it, and how Maharaj Parikshit went back to Godhead, the idea is the Lord wants to decorate us too. I mean, and He's giving us the pointers how that can happen. Even our lives may be quite ordinary and maybe even dull and maybe even, you know, like difficult. What the Lord is wanting is not any of those things. That's the consequence of our misuse of free will and so many foolish things. He's wanting that intimate relation and we are not sufficiently wanting. So this is to help prompt that wanting. This is the second canto, approaching the Lord's lotus feet. in the purport of text 17, Prabhupada writes, he's describing, because Brahma's business is creating. What Brahma says, what I create is only discovering what the Lord has created and then based upon the inspiration he gives me to take that which he has created and do something with it. That's what I do. The things that I do are already created by him, and even I am created by him. Hey, no false ego. But he's the creator. He's done something that nobody can do. But no false ego. So the ability to do anything, up to create a universe, down to the simplest little thing, and everything in between. The ability comes from the Supreme Lord, and we're just using the ability that comes from the Supreme Lord. Depends on the consciousness acting. Then there's this choice, acting through false ego or acting with the understanding the Lord is the inspirer of that act of creating. One's in transcendence and the other's in passion. That leads to ignorance, that leads to suffering. And we have choices to make. It's nice. Relationship with Krishna or forget Krishna. The second one's not a nice choice, but the dynamic is nice. There's free will. He doesn't interfere. Or discovering, because Brahma speaks of discovering that which the Lord has already created. So when you discover something that's already created, what's the big deal? It's already created. But the big deal is there's some empowerment of the Supreme Lord to discover that. The example that Prabhupada gives is Christopher Columbus sails from Europe and goes across the Atlantic Ocean. There's America, and he's famous for discovering America. So many places are named after him. The name of the boat that he sailed on is still famous because Columbus was on it. And the year and what he did. So, why did Columbus, it's not somebody else, get the credit for discovering something? And Prabhupada explains, it's very important for us in day-to-day life, the ability of everyone to do something or to discover something, that ability comes from the Supreme Lord. And then he writes, this ability is awarded by the Lord according to one's willingness to render service unto the Lord. Of course, it wasn't that Christopher Columbus was thinking, I really want to serve Krishna. I gave the example yesterday of one who really wanted to glorify Krishna, and Krishna awarded him with 1, 2, 3, just this inspiration. So there's also the factor of piety. For the piety for the devotee is not the prerequisite, because devotional service itself creates piety. Shunvatasukata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. But it's a different kind of piety than the material piety of helping a little old lady across the street, or giving some food to a hungry person, or something. An act of kindness. That's one kind of piety. And so for Mozart to be able to compose, for him to get the inspiration to do what he did, or somebody to get some inspiration to do what somebody did, those factors are there, but ultimately behind those factors is the super soul. and the super soul is ready to give. Ready to give decoration, ability to create, ability to discover. He's also ready to show himself. And one can understand his existence more proportionate to one's surrender and the eagerness to do some service for the Lord. And in that consciousness, one gets a transcendental feeling that just doesn't exist in the arena of material affairs. It's not even like the happiness of goodness when you feel good because you did a good deed, a good thing. Bhagavatam is teaching us the principles of God realization, not just to feel good, conditioned by the mode of goodness. Each of us is awarded vision according to our attitude or our regard for Krishna. And as there's eagerness to serve Krishna, Krishna provides a vision how in all circumstances to favorably serve Krishna. And otherwise, one doesn't have such a vision, and one sees circumstances in an altogether different way, troubling, bewildering, anxiety creating, and so on. So now we'll go to the verses for today. We'll come back to this. It's you'll see the connection. Very relevant. Although what's being spoken about is, you know, before we even existed, the unfolding of creation. It's even before Brahma existed. But in the first canto, there were six questions at the beginning, first chapter, first canto. And one of those six questions is, please describe the incarnations of the Lord, the forms of the Lord as he appears in this world. And the Leela avatars are described. Also the Purusha avatars are described. Mahavishnu, Gavadakshaya Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu, they're described. And they're very relevant because they make this place happen. And now, in the second canto, we're getting a more detailed picture of how they make it happen. Which is an essential part of creation because Brahma's answering the question, what's the background behind what you do? The background is now being explained. And very important to note, this cannot be discovered through modern science. This is not knowledge that's accessible by sense perception or by reason and logic. It's accessible when Lord Brahma tells you this is the way it is, because he has first-hand experience. Otherwise, it's not accessible. So now this is just touching on the point of faith and reason. When this explanation is presented, it's really, wow, this is fascinating. But it's also very logical. It's not irrational. The sequence of unfolding of creation makes so much sense, or as some people say, I really like Krishna consciousness because it's so scientific. Because there's a spiritual science behind it. There is a spiritual technology behind it. As opposed to saying, God wished that it was and so it was. Okay. Could you go over that a little more slowly? How did that happen? So, the Vedas also say there's the will of the Lord, And parasya shakti devadaiva shruyate so bhavaki jnana bhava kriyacha. Behind all things, there's the will of the Lord, and because the Lord wills his various shaktis, or energies, they do according to his will. So that's a little more detail, and now we're getting a little more detail upon that. How those unfolding of the unmanifest energies come into a manifest state, and it makes a lot of sense that the subtle ones appear first, and then the more gross forms appear, and then there's moderating factors called the modes of nature that make it come out sometimes like this, come out sometimes like that. You get variety of manifestations of the unfolding into the gross forms of matter, and then how the whammy, the bewildering influence of matter upon the pure living entity takes place, and at the same time how the release of the pure living entity from that whammy can take place and is proportionate to their disposition of service to the Supreme Lord. And conversely, proportionate to one's adversity to serve the Supreme Lord, or carelessness, negligence, slackness, you get the whole show of material energy. And the mode of ignorance being prominent when that happens, and the passion being prominent when that happens, one chases ardently after the mirage, the happiness that never happens, although it appears to be happiness, and then the misery and the sorrow that it didn't happen, and the grief and the anxiety and the sadness and depression and anger and destruction, and then the sense there's got to be something wrong here. And then turning to God, and then the message of God doing something, but then, you know, the passion is so strong. And Prabhupada describes all this in the purport. The passion is so strong, it covers the living entity from actually perceiving God. And then he can get carried away into passionate activity, and then suffering. So, Prabhupada says here, this makes self-realization very difficult in this age. And so then, that brings the whole, the unfolding of creation helps us understand how we got here, which tells us there's the doorway out, which is, again, what this second canto is there for. There's the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. He's there. He's accessible at any moment if we only desire that access. And we strive by right means. A whole lot of mercy really helps too. But this, so, the previous section that we discussed was for the purpose of creation, the modes, the three modes are manifest. The Lord remains pure because he's fully transcendental, but for the service, for the purpose of creation, he manifests or he accepts these three modes, and things happen. Maya adhyakshena prakriti, just by his adhyaksha, by his overseeing things, they just happen. He doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to say anything. He just has to will something. He just has to glance at something. And it happens. Very powerful. Because because those energies are his energies, and they have the attitude of service to him. Indication comes, they're doing it. There's no, not even a fraction of a second of delay. It's happening just because he desires it to happen. They're his energies. Then those three modes, we call to discuss, comes in again in today's discussion, so I'm taking time to review. The modes of nature then manifest corresponding to the modes, matter, knowledge, and variety of activities. Matter manifest by ignorance, knowledge manifest by goodness, and variety of activities manifest by guess what? Passion. And corresponding to those three modes, then also is cause and effect, cause and effect. So a cause produces an effect, which then becomes a cause for the next effect, which then becomes the cause for the next effect, which then just keeps going like that. So all he does is will. It creates an effect. It becomes a cause. It creates an effect. He's just, you know, playing on his flute, and playing with a coward boy, enjoying transcendental pastimes in Vrindavan. He has nothing to do with this. But because there's living entities that have this attitude, I don't want to be here. I want to be. I don't want to enjoy apart from you. He sanctions it. Not what he... His will is that we return and enjoy loving pastimes with him. But because of his loving nature and the living entities desiring to exercise their free will differently, this whole creation takes place. And by the arrangement of cause and effect, he doesn't have to stay there and, you know, keep stay in the control valves and, you know, keep moving the gears and levers and keep it all happening. He just expands himself as Mahavishnu, and who expands himself as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, expands himself as Shiradakshaya Vishnu. And they superintend, but even they don't directly contact material nature. Mahavishnu just glances, and it happens. So these three modes become manifest, and the three modes create what is being called by Lord Brahma as the conditions of cause and effect, and the sense of responsibility for the living entity for their choices, and from their choices their actions, and from their actions the reactions according to the laws of nature. Meanwhile, Krishna is playing on his flute and playing leapfrog with the coward boys, calling names down in wells, climbing up trees, and imitating the peacocks, and all this business is happening here in the material world. It's cause and effect. So that these terms appear in Bhagavad Gita, Adi Bhautika, Adi Atmika, Adi Daivika. We discussed them yesterday. And these correspond to the modes of nature. We'll cover that in a little bit, rather than just reviewing it now. And then the last verse that we read was Brahma confesses to Narada that all of this is beyond the perception of the senses of the conditioned soul. It's beyond perception of the senses of the conditioned soul because they're covered by the modes of nature. And the modes of nature then control the seeing and the acting, like this example that was given, the conveyor belt. We're just, the machine of the material energy is working. And we're inside this machine thinking, now I'm doing this. Now I'm going to control that. And we're just being carried along by the machine. Yantra rudhani mayaya. You know, like a little kid, a false ego. I'm making a mud pie. Put it in the oven. I mean, this is crazy. We're imitating the activities of the personality of Godhead, in other words. We can't do something that does not have its prior existence. We can only imitate. That's what Brahma says. Whatever I'm doing, it's already been done. And the seed is there. I just take the seed and, like a gardener, grow the seed. And we're no different. Anything that we do, the spiritual perfection of that exists in the spiritual world, and over here is the reflection. We're just doing imitation stuff over here. The mud pie and put it in the oven. Or to create the sandcastle in the sky or something. And then find happiness in that. Only the trick is the happiness doesn't happen. The mode of passion says, whatever, you know, I want to enjoy something. And the enjoyment doesn't pan out. The flickering attraction of the senses for a sense object, whatever it may be, chief in the passion department is male-female attraction. And it makes the world go round. And, you know, the happiness that was expected, it, you know, what happens over time? It's not, you know, if there is not a religious purpose behind male-female attraction, it goes down the tubes. Because it isn't what it's made out to be. The romance or the thrill of male-female attraction doesn't last that long. And then what are you left with? As Prabhupada puts it in simple language, that people today get married because of sex attraction. And if there's some disturbance in their sex life, it's divorce. Because how many divorces are there? How many persons are getting married for a higher purpose? Or when they're doing things together in marriage, there's a higher purpose. And if there isn't a higher purpose, hey, what's in it for me is all that I'm interested in, and this is no fun anymore. See you later. When the mode of goodness is absent, the mode of passion takes over. And the mode of passion takes over, it becomes the mode of ignorance, frustration, anger, disappointment. I was expecting this, and I got that. I had an expectation that wasn't fulfilled. I'm frustrated. And it's your fault, because you didn't fulfill my expectation. Instead of, it's my fault for having the wrong expectation. But that's the modes of nature. That's what this place is. Prabhupada pins, you'll see, he pins so much on this adhyatmika, that's the misery that come from his own body and mind. Miseries that come, that's the suffering that comes from one's own expectations and passions to find enjoyment in matter. The soul doesn't find enjoyment in matter, naturally one's going to be frustrated. It's the wrong platform. But, you know, Brahma's describing how the whole show unfolds. And it'll give us a very clear idea how this whammy works and also the way out. Okay, so text 21. The Lord, who is the controller of all energies, entities, and their particular nature, for which they were created, and he again merges them independently. So that just spans a whole bunch of time. But for the purpose, this is all for the purpose of creation. These three, kala, karma, and swabhava, time, he says here, the fate of all living entities, so that means the reactions of their actions. Because you don't have reactions without actions, but you don't have actions without reactions either. So the fate of all living beings, time, and swabhava, the particular nature for which they were created. And he withdraws it all. So these are, yesterday morning we were discussing chapter 13, text 6 and 7, you know, kshetra, the field of activities, and how the 24 elements and the interactions of those 24 elements, which comes in the form of attractions and repulsions for sense objects, and happiness and distress and pleasure and pain and emotions. It's all in the field of activities. And it's all this manifestation of the show of the material energy because of this one thing. Living entity says, in a rebellious spirit, I don't want to be here. I want to enjoy some independently. So the place is created. And it's manifested in a very systematic way, sustained, and then withdrawn. The show's over for a while, and then resting period, and then again. The glance of Mahavishnu, the living entities, go sailing through space. And come in contact with material nature, and the modes of nature, and time, and activity, and it's all just the energies of the Lord mixing in different combinations. And then he withdraws it again. And in between, you know, we're very anxious over what piece of the pie we're going to get. And the pie is just his energies manifesting illusion. So if there's several statements in the purport, we'll cover them. He goes to this excellent use of metaphor. For fire, there's heat and light. So similarly for the Lord, he has his spiritual and material energies. The spiritual energies make the spiritual world, the material energies make the material world. But we should understand these are but energies of the energetic, as heat and fire are symptoms, heat and light are symptoms of fire. Then the next statement is, the Lord therefore exists in his impersonal form by such expansions of energy, particularly the material energy. He exists everywhere by the expansion of his energy. Although he's existing in Vrindavan, his energies are expanded in the material creation as they're nothing but manifestations of him in the form of his energies. But it's not personal like Krishna in Vrindavan. So his impersonal form. thus, the complete creation rests on his impersonal feature. Now, we should be very careful in understanding that statement. His impersonal feature means rest on his energies. In that sense, it rests on his impersonal feature. And going back one step in the cause and effect of things, those energies and the configurations of those energies, the seed for the configurations of those energies comes from the Brahma-jyoti, which rests upon Krishna. So the impersonal feature can mean the Brahman aspect of the Absolute Truth. Also, the impersonal feature can mean the expansion of his energies in the form of material creation. The impersonal expansion is a manifestation of his energy. And he is always in his personal feature, despite his innumerable, unlimited expansions of impersonal energies. And then Prabhupada quotes this, it's Bhagavad Gita 9.5-7. So this Bhagavad Gita 9, texts 5-7, are the Achincha Veda Veda Tattva verses of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna explains mystically, I am within everything, yet I'm outside of everything. Everything is within me and everything is not in me. Behold my mystic opulence. So it's describing the difference, simultaneous non-difference and difference of Krishna. Krishna is personal, so this is the understanding explained in the Bhagavatam. Krishna exists in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan, for the purpose of creation. He expands his energies, which are non-different than him, but they're different from him. They're not personal, they're not Krishna playing on his flute. They're his energies, therefore not different from him, but different from him. And then, to give an understanding of the mind that can't conceive of this, Krishna gives an example as the metaphor. Just as the wind blows in the mighty space but remains unchanged, so also understand that all things rest in me. So when the wind blows in space, is what's going on. Space is more subtle. So as the wind blows or stands still, space isn't affected at all. It doesn't get worn out because the wind is blowing. It doesn't get relief when the wind stops. It's just, it's unaffected because it's more subtle. Krishna is all spiritual. And then there's these material energies that are resting in him. And as they're undergoing change, Krishna is unchanged. The changes that they're undergoing is by Krishna's will, but he doesn't lift a pinky. He doesn't have to run around and keep everything well adjusted. He's enjoying the spiritual world. But it doesn't happen except by his own energies that are moving according to his will, and then they move according to his will, and he's unchanged. He's not callous. He's not, I don't care, let these people rot. They're bad. Smack them. They deserve it. He's not a vengeful god or cruel, like some people think. And any of you that have visited the Brooklyn Temple know that when you go from the Brooklyn Temple to Manhattan, you have to weave through this downtown area, downtown Brooklyn, and there's this thing called Albee Square. And all summer long, they have these guys, the fire and brimstone preachers. You're going to hell. You got to repent for your sins because God is vengeful. He'll smack you down. Repent for your sins. Like God is this, you know, mean master, and he's going to beat you. He's going to whoop you if you don't. That's not Krishna. It's not at all Krishna. So, anyway. For persons who are very steeped in ignorance, they may need the intimidation factor. But for persons in the mode of goodness, it's not, you don't appreciate the intimidation style of bringing one to submission. One appreciates the loving quality that brings one to submission, and that's the picture that the Bhagavatam gives. Now, the cruelty aspect of material nature, somebody else gets the credit for it in the Vedic picture, and that's Kali, Durga, with her trident, and piercing the living entities with the threefold miseries. Because the severity of the reaction for horrible deeds is horrible, commensurate with the horribleness. The reactions are horrible. But it's not God's this mean, cruel, vengeful, wrathful tyrant. Material nature lets us know that misbehavior is responsible for it. So, this is just a little appreciation of how Srimad Bhagavatam is the graduate study of Bhagavad Gita. 9.5-7 is expanded here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. For human intelligence, it is very difficult to conceive how the whole creation rests on his expansion of energy. But the Lord has given a very good example in the Bhagavad Gita, this example. The sky is separate, remains unaffected as the wind is blowing. Similarly, the Supreme Lord maintains everything created by his expansion of energy, yet at the same time he always remains separate from it. So that's the picture that we get from Lord Brahma that we wouldn't get unless we heard it from someone that has that picture. It's because it's before we existed. It's even before Brahma existed, so we can't know. It's an important statement and kind of obvious statement in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that for one who has birth, one who takes birth, however intelligent that person may be, they cannot know their source of existence because it existed before even their intelligence or they existed. So they can't know. You can't know except for one possible way, and that's disclosure. Otherwise, it's speculation, perhaps, maybe. It seems to me that it's most logical that definitely it happened this way. You can't know unless there's disclosure. And so Krishna chooses to disclose to his devotee because of their attitude or their eagerness in approach of loving service. And same, second canto, approaching in the humble mood at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Then the truths of this, of the Supreme and the process of creation and he who is beyond these three modes of material nature becomes knowable. text 22. After the incarnation of the first Purusha, Mahavishnu, or Karna Dakshini Vishnu, the Mahatattva, or the principles of material creation, take place. And then time is manifested. And in the course of time, the three qualities appear. Nature means the three qualitative appearances. They transform into activities. A whole lot just happened in that verse. The Mahavishnu makes his appearance, and from in sequence, from Mahavishnu, the Mahatattva appears, because before Mahavishnu's glance, it's the pradhan, just language, but it means the undifferentiated totality of material substance. By Mahavishnu's glance, it agitates the pradhan, and then the pradhan differentiates into different 24 elements, one by one. And also time makes its appearance. You have living entities that have desires that are dormant. They've been dormant for a long time within the body of Mahavishnu, but they have desires. And they have karma that's unfructified. So there's the living entities mixing with time, prakriti, and the three modes of nature, because prakriti means with the three modes. And Ishwara, what happens? Karma starts to happen. Activities start up. And Prabhupada explains the short purport. But he explains that you don't have activities without time. Time must be there, just like we're sitting in the room, and sometime before sitting in the room, we were somewhere else, and after some time, we're going to go somewhere else. Those are activities. You don't have activities without passage of time. Time is essential. And time is an energy of Krishna. The time energy brings things into being, holds them in place for some time, and destroys them. Time. So, time, Prabhupada gives definition. Time is a fascinating thing. Because, you know, has anybody seen a time before? What does the time look like? What is time? So, here's definition. Time, or kala, is the synonym of nature. And is the transformation of the principles of material creation. Now, he says the same thing in the next purport, and says the same thing in the verse that's Mahatattva, the principles of material creation, the principles of material creation being the 24 divisions. Mahatattva. It's the transformed manifestation of. So, time and living entities are injected by the glance of Mahavishnu, and then over Pradhan, the elements differentiate, but the time energy is there. It's the agent that makes those things happen, and then makes those things make other things happen, like activities. Powerful. Time destroys all things. That means it also brings things into being. As such, kala may be taken as the first cause of all creation and destruction and sustenance. And by transformation of nature, different activities of the material world become visible. But you don't have activities without time, in other words. But you can have time without activities. And you have the dormant stage of the avyakta, the unmanifest state. Time is there, but the living entities aren't mixing with material nature. So, because the time isn't right, and then when time is right, it happens. So, time makes things happen, and it makes things stay at rest. It's very mystical. Just like, you know, within a seed, there's life, but you have to plant the seed and then nurture the seed and then it starts to grow. Time has to be right. The conditions have to be right, but you don't have growth without time. Like a control factor that Krishna has. It's called time. The third verse, we'll get back to how is this relevant to what we do every day. Material activities, text 23, are caused by the Mahatattvas being agitated. What agitates the Mahatattva? The glance of Mahavishnu. But this actually agitates Pradhan. And once the living entities are there, and the time is there, and the karma of a living entity is there, Mahatattva gets agitated. And things happen. At first there's a transformation of the modes of goodness and passion. And don't forget, due to the mode of ignorance, matter, its knowledge, and different activities of material knowledge come into play. So again, these three, dravya, jnana, and karma. Kriya. Dravya, jnana, and kriya. They were mentioned in the previous verse. Matter, knowledge, and activity. Ignorance, goodness, passion. Matter, knowledge, activity. And if you remember from the previous verse, 17 I think it is, there's the cause and effect. That's Adibhautika, Adiatmika, Adidaivika. Modes of nature. Modes of nature are everywhere. It's the biggest topic in the whole Bhagavad Gita. There are more verses dedicated to explaining the modes of nature than any other topic. Behind that is the fruitive activities of a living entity, of those modes of nature, the mode of passions, big time. And dealing with the mode of passion and the fruitive activities that arise out of the mode of passion, that's a big part of getting out of the material existence, addressing it in a proper way. We'll see as the purport unfolds. Material creation of every description are more or less due to the development of the mode of passion, rajas. The Prabhupada builds a case like a lawyer. The Mahatattva is the principle of material creation, and when it is agitated by the will of the Supreme, at first the modes of passion and goodness are prominent, and afterwards the mode of passion, being generated in due course by material activities of different varieties, becomes prominent. And living entities are thus involved more and more in ignorance. It's like a whirlpool. On the outside, it's very calm. But then there's a movement, so it starts to go faster and faster and faster and faster as you go towards the center. That's how the material world works. Goodness. set to you. A little passion. A little activity. Leads to more. And as passion increases, it predominates, just like a visual image is, you got a big bucket of white paint, and you take an eyedropper of red paint, squirt it into the red paint, stir it around. It's off-white now. But it's not as innocent as you just put some little eyedropper of red paint in. When it comes to the laws of nature, for the action, there's a reaction. From the mode of passion, you get passion back. It inspires more activity. Another dropper full. Keep stirring. Another dropper. Just even if you don't add anything more, we'll just speak of adding something more. And it becomes darker. And what follows the mode of passion is prostration. Kamesha. Krodesha. Rajoguna samudbhava. Didn't feel so good. I'm frustrated. I was expecting happiness and I got misery.
Jayate sangat sanjayate kana. It's all the same thing. There's the senses, when we're meditating on the senses, then desire comes. And then from desire comes anger from through the whole process and spoil and everything finished. Then
For us, it's a whole fog we're living in. This one should not sit close to his mother.